fantasies. Everything I got working for me. So eat that, peep that. I'm the one to beat, yeah.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. So much that I could talk about today, but I'm going to start with some sound that Anya was kind enough to pull for me. This first the one that we're going to go with, and by the way, Anya, this is going to be cut 6A. This is Representative Garrett Graves on Morning Joe. It's an MSNBC show this morning. And Joe Scarborough, who used to be a Republican member of Congress, asked him what I thought was the best question. And he asked, and Representative Graves is not a fan of the Freedom Caucus, okay? Has a lot of harsh words for Matt Gaetz. We may get to more of them. But the most important question that he was asked today was after he got done trashing Gaetz and sort of talking about how ridiculous everything is. Joe Scarborough said to him, listen, the liberals have an extreme wing or a more left or a most progressive, however you want to express it, wing, generally referred to as the squad. Sometimes I get that wrong and call them the crew, but that's just because I love the Brewers, RIP 2023. So the squad, they're the most progressive branch of the Democratic Party. And there's a more of them than there are of the Freedom Caucus. And so what Joe Scarborough asked Representative Graves this morning was, how is it that Nancy Pelosi was able to so ably create and get legislation up and out of committees and passed and adopted when, you know, she was dealing with the most progressive wing, the squad, if you will, this sort of greenest element of the Democratic Party. And Kevin McCarthy wasn't. Why is that? And I thought what Representative Graves said was just incredibly revealing. He didn't mean it to be so, and I'm going to break down for all of you why I think that is. But let's go ahead and listen to the clip. This is this morning on Morning Joe, Joe Scarborough. Why was Nancy Pelosi able to deal with her most extreme wing? And why was Kevin McCarthy not able to do that? Let's go ahead, Anya.
She's the one who evicted herself.
Joe Scarborough here. So tell me, you had suggested that the squad was about the same as the five or six people that ousted McCarthy. Nancy Pelosi had about a 5-vote majority, still got things done. Why do you think it is that Democrats and Nancy Pelosi were able to keep the House in order and Republicans weren't?
You know, Joe, it is a fantastic question. And you obviously understand this intimately from your service in the Congress. The Democrats, and it's a characteristic of the ideology where they bond together much more. I think they're used to having a little bit more centralized leadership, representing urban areas, more dependence upon government. And you are intimately aware of the Lone Ranger status, the independence, the give me liberty or give me death perspective of many conservatives, of many Republicans. And I think that that's where you just really have that tension, and that Republicans don't want to be told what to do, don't want to be centralized. And I think it really is sort of a characteristic or a tendency of many Republicans or of conservatives that really is at odds with this whole concept of a central leader. Last thing is, you know, something Kevin McCarthy said a lot that I think it's really poignant in this case. He didn't hire and he can't fire any of the members that he's supposed to be leading. It really creates a challenging management structure. But once again, I think it's more characteristic of Republican ideology.
We can cut it. Okay. I'm just going to take the last bit first. He didn't hire him and he can't fire him. Yes, they're elected members of Congress. Like, thank you for that insight, Representative Graves. Boo. And so did Nancy Pelosi. It's just objection, non-responsive. Please instruct the witness to answer. But boy, was the first part of that answer interesting. He basically, so I'm paraphrasing. Democrats are more used to bonding. They understand that there needs to be centralized leadership, that they have to get together. There's a greater reliance on government. That's, and he says, like, this is the characteristic sort of endemic to Democrats. More people in urban areas, more reliance on government. Then he went on to describe the GOP and Republicanism. He basically said, these are don't tread on me folks. Nobody can tell me what to do. We don't believe in a central leader, was some of the phraseology. All right, like I always do, let me break down the baloney into the straight talk. Democrats believe in government and institutions, and Republicans don't. That is the entire, and he just said it, right? This isn't about freaking Kevin McCarthy, is it now? It's not about the Freedom Caucus. He just defined Republicanism as we don't believe in government and democratic institutions, and Democrats do. That is the entire point. That has been a brewing since Newt Gingrich. That is their brand. I never understood when anybody runs to be an elected official in government if you don't believe in government in the first place. Of course they're burning it down. That's been the plan all along. Could go off about Grover Norquist and a whole bunch of other things. Drown the baby in the bathtub. That is it in a nutshell. And this has nothing to do with Kevin McCarthy. It has nothing to do with the current iteration of this. It's just in its most florid, extreme manifestation. But it has always been a defining characteristic of the Republican Party post, basically, Nixon. We don't believe in government. Don't tax me. Don't tread on me. Don't clean my water. Don't make sure my air is clean. Don't fund my public schools. Cindy from Appleton, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What say you this afternoon?
Well, I just don't understand. If these politicians are also anti-government, why are they government employees?
Right? Brilliant minds think alike. I mean, I just said it. If you're uninterested, if you think government is the root of all evil, that there should be no centralized leadership, then why are you running for elected office? Go to the private sector and make your
and
billions.
Running. Yep. And they continue to run and run and run. You know?
Yes, they don't never go away.
They don't leave. They stay. Yep. I don't get it.
Unbelievable. And the reason why is because it's the definition of performative politics. They do this because it's self-aggrandized, ego-affirming, power-leveraging, power for power's sake. It's never been about good government, and it's certainly never been about good policy. I also thought it was really interesting this morning, Joe Manchin was on, and he gave some comparisons, or he presented, he was talking about Ukraine, and I thought he did a pretty cogent job explaining why Republicans like Matt Gaetz and the knuckle-dragging MAGA crowd, why they're having trouble understanding that we can walk and chew gum at the same time. So, Anya, this is going to be clip two. So this is Joe Manchin, also on Joe Scarborough's Morning Joe this morning, explaining why GOP support for Ukraine is waning. Go ahead and run that, Anya.
We're committed at that time to go help our allies.
I've heard reporting from the Trump side that there are only 25 of the whatever it is, 221 Republican districts where people are still supporting that war effort for Ukraine. The numbers are declining on the Republican side. So how do you make a better argument? The argument you've just made, why is it so difficult to sell that to the American
public?
Doing,
they're pitting it off. Okay, which one are you more concerned about? You concerned about the border? Are you concerned about Ukraine? You concerned about basically a high cost inflation or Ukraine? They start putting it that way, and people start saying, well, wait a minute, that's second on my list, or that's third on my list. For world peace and to have a quality of life in this world and basically have democracy and freedoms, and we are the superpower of the world, and our superpower comes because we're willing to defend democracy and freedom anywhere in the world. We walk away from that.
We can wrap that clip up. What did he just describe? I talk about this all the time here on the Maggie Dawn Show. The illusion of a false choice. that everything is zero sum, that we cannot walk and chew gum, that we can't deal with immigration and support Ukraine, right? We can only do one or the other. And he goes on and he elucidates this false choice. Deal with inflation or help Ukraine. That's garbage. As Professor Yoshiko Herrera yesterday so ably enunciated, only 5% of the U.S.'s entire defense budget, which is only part of our total overall budget, goes to aid Ukraine. And notice what's up here, right? The through line between what Representative Garrett Graves admitted on the air, that the GOP is only and ever and is completely reduced to sort of anti-governmental chaos mongering, shows up in the presentation, their framework of false choices, of it's always a zero-sum game. Because if you think of it that way, you pit people against each other. You foment division, which foments chaos. And oh, do you think it's a coincidence that the party that doesn't believe in government, doesn't believe in institution, is a collaborator of chaos, wants to divide us, happens to be aligning with the architects of the current American chaos, or at least the accelerators of it, Vladimir Putin and the Russian misinformation machine. That's all about creating chaos here in the United States. You can join my conversation this afternoon, because I'm going to put some other things together in the bottom half of this hour. But then when we come back, starting at the half hour, I'm going to be joined by my great friend, Bob DeVita. He's going to explain why the U.S. healthcare system is so screwed up, you know, in just a couple of few minutes of talk radio. So keep it locked here on the Maggie Dawn Show. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us, 844-967-2789. Spending all my time on what I want. Looking in the mirror, I'm so glad I'm here. I'm the one to be, yeah, I'm the one to be, yeah. Eat that, beat that, I'm the one to be, yeah. Even though I'm not happy. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn, and you are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, you can always get the app from your favorite app store for free. Is my favorite price, $0. Just type in Civic Media, and there we will be. So before the break, I was stitching together some basic things about the GOP. They're starting to say the quiet part out loud now a lot more than they ever did before. And it's basically that the GOP is an anti-government, anti-institution party now. That's what it's devolved into. It's been a march, but it has been a steady, unrelenting march. It's now in a full-out sprint. They just want to burn it down in a very literal way. And the way that you accomplish this is by dividing, acting like everything is zero sum, and fomenting discontent, hating of your neighbor. And the chief separator, the chief separatist, the chief chaos agent is the orange man. And boy, did he give it some verbiage earlier this week. Anya, we're going to be doing the blood clip here in a second. We know that Trump is a racist. It's his brand. But man, again, it's just the quiet part out loud. This isn't about let's come together and solve problems and compromise. It's zero sum, us versus them. And the us are only basically white, cisgendered, heteronormative landowners, right? I mean, that's it. Let's play the Trump on immigration, if you will.
Nobody has any idea where these people are coming from. And we know they come from prisons. We know they come from mental institutions, insane asylums. We know they're terrorists. Nobody has ever seen anything like we're witnessing right now. It is a very sad thing for our country. It's poisoning the blood of our country. It's so bad. And people are coming in with disease. People are coming in with every possible thing that you can have.
That's Nazism. Okay. These people are poisoning the blood of our country. They're coming in with disease. This is a tale as old as time. That the other is diseased, bad, not part of us. That otherization, that cultivation of chaos, that is the GOP of today. It's just where we're at right now. And even, you know, Representative Garrett Graves, what was the language? We don't like a central leader. We don't like to be told what to do. Well, yeah, you don't like government. Billy, from the north side of Madison, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. What say you, my friend?
Hey, counselor. What I'm wondering about is, you know, my take on why the Supreme Court decided for Bush and Bush v. Gore was because, I know this isn't the rationale they probably gave, but just like, hey, you know, we don't have time to decide this correctly because that would just upset some of the people that we don't want to upset. So we're just, nope, you're done, no more recount. And what is to stop the Supreme Court, which is far worse now, from doing the exact same thing at whatever point regarding prosecutions of Donald Trump? What's to stop them from saying, well, you know, he might be guilty, but really we can't, you know, there's an election. We gotta just push this aside because it's just too late.
Great questions, Billy. There's two in there, and I'm going to break them down. Basically asked about what is going on when the Supreme Court and Bush v. Gore is like, this is too much recounting. There's too many hanging chads. It's all too complicated. Let's just call it done. And this wasn't the constitutional rationale. I'd have to reread the case, and I don't want to get it wrong on the air. But I do want to take a moment to observe this. Choosing to maintain the status quo does select winners and losers. Doing nothing is a choice. Maintaining institutions that generate disparate outcomes that clearly fall along racial lines, is a value choice. It's to continue to privilege those who have historically always benefited from these systems. Right? Preservation of the status quo ante is an expression of value that privileges white, heteronormative, cisgendered landowners, men predominantly. I forget what Billy's second question was on you. If you remember what it was. what's to prevent them from doing that now? It's the very nature of a criminal prosecution. The appeals standard for certain things in criminal prosecutions, you basically have to prove actual innocence as long as the trial court judges do a pretty darn good job ensuring that the defendant's rights are protected. So all else being equal, if you're the trial court judge in any of Donald Trump's criminal trials, you're going to always tend to err on the defendant's side of the ledger. Because that way, he's got no good appeal. So I think it's a good place to end when we're talking about preserving the status quo ante and the moral imperative to fix institutions that don't work for most of us most of the time. Because when we come back, we're going to talk about healthcare and that institution. It's not just an economic system. It's an institution in this United States. And how did we end up in this place with my good friend, Bob DeVita? Keep it locked, everybody. If you've got questions, Bob's got answers. 844-967-2789 here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join our conversation this afternoon, 844-967-2789. I'm super excited to be joined for the second time by my good friend, former healthcare executive, Bob DeVita.
Yes.
Now a junkie professor, an adjunct professor at UWM's School of Business, Executive yes. MBA, Healthcare Leadership Professor.
Yeah.
And we're here to try to break down all the things. How did we get here?
Yeah.
That's the big one. So welcome, Bob. It's great to have you back.
It's wonderful to be here. I was here last month.
Yes.
But the Republican National Convention interrupted.
Yes, it sure did. But we've got a full half hour. If you have questions about the U.S. healthcare system, how we got here, why it still stinks, and how we get out of this mess, you can always give us a buzz. 844-967-2789. I was talking before the break that, you know, somewhere in the root of the GOP, and you don't have to weigh in on that particularly, is the sort of do-nothingness of it, right? The anti-governmental sort of lean of it in the post-Nixon era. It is not surprising to me that it was under a Democratic president that we at least began the long march towards healthcare for all.
Yes.
But the last time you were here, Bob, I thought you did yeoman's work in helping to set the stage of, like, why are we in this place? How did this evolve in this bizarre way that we've got a thing that we all need, that we need more of as we get older, and yet it's a profit-making enterprise.
Yes.
So help contextualize this historically for folks.
Sure. A little bit of history. We have lost our moorings in U.S. healthcare. I won't go into the history, but a little bit of background is, you know, it started out as in the nonprofit sector, nonprofit being not for shareholders, but you still have to make a profit. It's just how you use it. That's the difference. And for the welfare of the people we serve, not for the executives, not for the staff, but for the welfare of the people we serve, the community. And we've sort of lost that. And the reason we've lost it is because we don't pay attention to the mission. People like me and people that I teach go into healthcare because of the mission, what we do. Service, and it gets beat out of us. And back to your previous discussion about chaos, we've introduced chaos into the healthcare system because we haven't defined what the problem is. And the problem is both structural as well as the moral problems that I talked about, the lack of mission focus. But the structural problem is that the thinking about healthcare stopped being creative in the Nixon administration.
And from a governmental policy side. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So we had Medicare 1965, Medicaid 1965, and then Nixon in the 70s. And he actually had quite a wide array of innovation. And then that skipped over a couple of decades. But even recently, so Obamacare, which you were referring to, mm-hmm. emanated from two conservative viewpoints. One was the Heritage Foundation.
Yep.
Did a white paper. It's taken down from their website.
Yeah, you can't find it anymore.
I used to teach from it about the Affordable Care Act in terms of an insurance product.
Right.
It was actually very good. They took it down as soon as Obamacare passed because they couldn't stand to have that model. The second piece was Mitt Romney.
I was going to say it's Romney Care. Stop calling it Obamacare. It was Romney Care.
It was Romney Care, 2005, 6, 7. And it was like a carbon copy of writ large of what the state of Massachusetts did.
Yep.
And then Obamacare was sold by too many people as a panacea when all it was destined to do and designed to do was cure the individual market for health insurance, which was a mess. Think of Medicare for under 65.
Yep.
Period. Think of a 20% rate of uninsured across the U.S. population, period. So today it's around 9% uninsured, cut in half from the time Obamacare became effective, which was January 2013, till now. So
by a one-vote margin on the Supreme Court.
By a one-vote margin on the Supreme Court. Three times it went to the
Supreme Court. Yes.
Three times.
And John McCain.
John McCain.
Thumbs down. Right.
And 70 times to, quote, repeal and replace.
Yes.
Rip it out, root and branch, is what Mitch McConnell said.
The funniest thing about repeal and replace was that there was never a replace. Yeah, it was just like, let's repeal this.
Bingo. That's what I meant by the thinking stopped. Yeah. The Democrats have had all of the thinking. And this is, it's not because I'm a Democrat or Republican. It's because that's the truth.
Factually observational.
Second Republican debate. Last week, Nikki Haley was the only one who discussed health care. And she talked about...
And it took us to get to the second debate before they talked about health care.
What's interesting is they backed off blasting Obamacare because they know it's enshrined and it's doing the job.
Correct. You know, a program that takes the uninsured proportion of Americans down... cuts that in half is a win. Hey, Anya, do you have that my favorite Nikki Haley sound from the second Republican debate?
I hear you. I feel a little bit dumber for what you said.
Oh, yeah, this one.
Because I can't believe here we've got a TikTok situation. What they're doing is these 150... I hear you. I feel a little bit dumber for what you say.
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe
every time I hear you, Vivek, I feel a little bit dumber. I should, you know, I don't agree with Nikki Haley on a whole bunch of stuff, right? But here's what. That woman owned that debate stage both times. And here's what, because it's the GOP, she has 0% chance. Forget Trump. She wouldn't be able to break through because her actual given name on her birth certificate isn't Nicole. It's not Nikki, right?
Yeah, it's an Indian name.
Yes, and she's a woman.
And she's a woman.
I mean.
The horror of it. An immigrant and a woman.
I know. But returning to this, one of the things that I think is really interesting about your perspective, Bob, is that you've been on the inside of it, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, that lifelong dedication and also the fact that you now take time during your retirement to teach, I just want to say thank you. And you're also very honest about what's wrong with healthcare,
which is
so refreshing. we need, you know, the revolving door. The revolving door should also include a time where everybody that's been on any side of this stuff is hooked up to the truth-telling machine, right? The third stop is where you have to tell everyone the truth about what you know.
So Maggie's heard the story. I came out of retirement the second time. I retired twice. I came out of retirement to do Common Ground Healthcare as the founding CEO because I was part of driving the healthcare car into the ditch, even though I was trying not to. It's in the ditch so bad that we've got to jack it out, you know, and it's, you know, not coming out easily. So I thought, well, Common Ground Healthcare as part of the Affordable Care Act, we've got a chance to do something innovative. And this is my sort of payback for atonement, I called it. I actually called it atonement. The other co-founders remember me.
Gee whiz, are you Catholic?
Yeah. It was, well, they guilted me into it. Like, Bob, you grew up here. you fix should it. Do this. Fix this. Help us fix it. Okay, so I tried, and we've done great things. It's still there. It's still doing well. Insures 67,000 people. Watch their commercials on Monday Night Football because it is open enrollment. Pro tip.
Yes. It starts what date? October 15th?
Yep. Yep. So long story short, being honest about healthcare. And here's my simple sports analogy, because you knew I'd come up with a sports analogy.
Of course.
If this was the U.S. hockey team, I'd fire the coach and the players and start over, because U.S. healthcare, I mean, we suck at it. Excuse me. That's the term.
Yep.
We're not good at it. We should be good at it. I mean, we, you know, have AI, we have ChatGPT, we have Moonshot, we have mRNA, all this stuff, and we can't get healthcare right?
Well, I continue to be baffled by the fact that people have a really hard time getting their heads around this basic fact. Rich people will always have Cadillac healthcare, yeah. Like full stop. The question is, and as an economist, this is what really bothers me about this. The reason that conservatives, that Mitt Romney tried to basically get everyone health insurance, is because it is vastly cheaper for every taxpayer.
Absolutely.
Corporate taxpayers, rich taxpayers, middle class taxpayers, and folks that don't make even a living wage. It is cheaper for everyone in the long run if you have really good health care, really good preventative care. This isn't complex. Everyone knows what the solution is, right? The problem is it's not politically viable. It's not politically salient for one party to say that out loud.
Right.
Because they start to trade away their power and influence.
Yep. During the Tea Party's ascendancy, it was clear that because Obamacare was termed Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act was termed Obamacare, which was kind of cool when it became successful. Obama said, hey, I'm glad they named it after me.
Of course.
But during that time, it was pretty divisive. But when you asked people, and I'd go to libraries, community centers, because we were a pretty small startup and I was in sales as well as the CEO. I'd ask questions, show of hands. How many people here have had medical bankruptcy in their family?
Everyone's hand goes up.
How many people have a small business? You're an entrepreneur. You're a sole proprietor. You're self-insured. Can you get health insurance? No. Show of hands. How many people are uninsured? Everybody was, not everybody, but many people.
Uninsured or underinsured, or right? Underinsured.
So it didn't matter. As long as you didn't say the words Affordable Care Act, if you talked about the principles, how about show of hands? How many here have children living at home and they're 22, 23, and they can't get a job yet or in their grad school? Wouldn't it be good if they had health insurance? Oh, yeah.
Of course.
So you do now under Obamacare have health insurance until age 26. So,
which is like millions of people.
Millions.
So, I mean, of course that should be the deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And the principles were acceptable. It was the term. And it was the
term. The partisanship behind it.
Yeah.
Government bad. Let me go back to government bad. Right. You know, like workable public policy. Oh, that's following a leader. That's following some sort of centralized thing that makes it better for everybody. That's bad.
Yep. When I was hiring people for the co-op, I would do a little screen. And if people came in and I could tell they were anti-government,
mm-hmm.
It was an immediate no, because I knew that they would not be able to authentically represent Common Ground Healthcare because
right.
We were funded. Now, I'd also say, you know that laptop you're using, the software, that Microsoft, you know how that they got that software? They got that because of DARPA, which is the Defense Department's Innovation Center. In 1969, they created the internet. And because it's in the public domain, that became free to everybody. And that's what Microsoft and Google, they all use. So this is not a government handout. That's what they use. They're capitalists. We're capitalists. We're using a loan, by the way, it's all paid back, 100%. The point was, this is not about bad government. This is about an investment in our community, the welfare of the community, back to healthcare.
Well, and I'm glad you point this out, because I was talking about this idea of false choice. And one of the most grotesque expressions of that false choice is that you either have bad government or capitalism, right? Or like the private sector. We have government, and we can continuously ask it to be more accountable, more efficient, to do better. You can criticize the heck out of government, but to act like you don't need it, that there are some problems that are so macro that we need a centralizing organization to solve them, is simply ludicrous. See all of written history.
Snow from the midnight sun, the hot springs flow. The hammer of the gods.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you were wondering what that amazing cover singer was from our last segment, that was Patti Smith. I actually didn't need you to tell me that one. I was like, as soon as it was in my cans, Anya, I was like, that is Patti Smith. I don't know if you know this, Bob, and Bob's wife is here with us in the studio. So hi, Jean, and thanks for being here.
Thank you.
One of the things about the show is that we only play women vocalists or women produced music or women lead singer bands. So that's a lot of fun. It's great to hear some familiar songs and then hear a lady's voice over the top of it. If you guys want to join the conversation about healthcare, 844-967-2789. The incentive structure is wrong. There's a ton of intermediaries. It's so black box. Consumers don't have real choice. That's all part of this. But there is sort of a new and pernicious element of what's going on in healthcare delivery systems. We see it a lot. And that's private equity, right?
Yes.
PE funds in and of themselves aren't bad. Anybody that has a 401k or a pension, I guarantee you, it owns some private equity, okay? This isn't bad per se. Making money is not bad per se. But when you pair PE, which basically like strips down businesses to get rid of anything that is extraneous to make it efficient and return it to profit maximizing as quickly as possible. That's sort of, if you think of private equity as the like apex predator in investment, that kind of gives you an idea. Private equity's entree into healthcare has nothing but sort of bad outcomes in the offing.
Right.
Tell me about what we were talking about on break, Bob. This just went down.
Yep. So private equity and the model that Nikki Haley was talking about are related. Nikki Haley was talking about, and there's nothing against Nikki Haley. This is about what she was saying in terms of the application of classical economic theory to healthcare. And as Maggie knows full well, because she was a guest lecturer in my executive MBA last year about the behavioral economic theory that explains healthcare. And she can go into another program into why.
Don't worry. Don't turn your dials. I won't do it now.
but it's fundamentally flawed when you try to explain it in terms of classical economic theory. And that's what we're trying to explain. Private equity is the same drill. Private equity does not apply to healthcare because the model doesn't work. Why doesn't it work? Because if you apply it, you strip out, like, for example, the pediatrics department or the emergency room because they lose money. And how are you going to have an integrated healthcare system without those? Or they say, okay, let's load up a debt and then we'll have an exit strategy. We'll sell it and then people will have to service the debt. Well, many companies go under because of the debt service coverage. We can't.
In other words, healthcare. You don't have sufficient cash flow to pay your loan payments.
Yeah. And we're supposed to be around in healthcare for the continuity of care, for the community's health.
And continuity of care, you hear this a lot when wonks talk. Here it is in like real people talk, that you immediately when you are prenatal, your mom gets prenatal care and that you come out of the womb and people care just as much about you as when you were in the womb, and you have healthcare for your entire life and preventative medicine, and people teach you about nutrition and exercise, and your doc isn't just writing you scripts because that's how they get paid, right? It's not that. It is a lifetime of care.
Yes.
And if people have that, it costs everyone less. I don't know that we can hit that point enough.
Yes, it does, because actually actuarial science supports this. The law of large numbers. You have to have everybody insured in order to have the law of large numbers.
Unless you go to single payer, right? Like, well, unless you go to government delivered healthcare, yeah.
Which is politically
different. It's a different system.
It's not what we do. We don't do that. Except at the VA, which is, by the way, an excellent healthcare system, having relatives who serve doctors or as doctors.
So there's one other group of people in the United States that are guaranteed healthcare.
It's veterans.
Well, there's two groups. It's veterans. You know what the second group of people are?
The Merchant Marine.
No. It's people.
Congress.
Oh, yes, because they have a permanent appropriation.
Yes, they do.
It's actually people that are incarcerated.
Oh, yes. Yes. Prison healthcare. Exactly. Yep. And there's a huge business in prison healthcare.
Yep.
Good point.
I can't go down that road because I have to deal with it in my actual day-to-day job.
You do.
But to me, it's interesting that, you know, hey, in these couple of areas.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Yeah.
So here's where I want to end. If there was one thing that you could urge Congress to do, and they would actually do it to help improve healthcare in the United States, what would it be, Bob?
I would be very basic. I would go back to the Affordable Care Act, and I'd start tinkering with it, because there are things that can be done right now to fix it. It's not perfect. It's like any system. And it sounds like, oh my God, that's not good. That's not innovative. Well, but it will be. It'll chip away at the problem. Yeah, it's not going to be a Hail Mary pass. No, we don't. That's not going to work. And then we have to go back again, and in a design way, look at the next iteration.
Yep.
Which is beyond the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act was more than just insuring people. It was also about quality of care. It involved Medicare. It involved a whole raft of things.
Mandates for certain things, you know, like birth control.
Essential health benefits, which is oral contraceptives.
Yes.
Yes.
From your lips to God's ears, we got to wrap up. My thanks to Bob DeVita. You're going to come back. We're going to keep talking about this. I'm going to give you a list of questions. Because inquiring minds always want to know. Yeah. I got a couple of programming notes before we close out. Next week on Monday, I'm going to be talking about religion and faith and atheism and what actually all of this stuff is. And I'm going to be joined by one of my most favorite atheists, the one, the only, Dominic Salvia of the Devil's Advocates Radio. And on Thursday of next week, I'm going to be joined for an entire hour talking about how the crisis of competence for women, that the curse of congeniality for women costs us physically in our health, with my good friend and longtime executive coach to the Fortune 50 CEOs, Susan K. Worley. She'll be there with me all day, all hour next week, Thursday. So lock it in. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Maggie Dawn. You've been listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We build all your ruins.